we get things underway this afternoon, though, by going to the telephone line and welcoming into the program the editorial director of the Sports and Society Program at the Aspen Institute, John Solomon, joins us this afternoon. John, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we want to talk with you about a specific area of youth sports, and the Institute has done some great work on this. And I want to talk about sports during the time of pandemic, and you've actually developed a cross-sport risk assessment guide. Who are the principals in putting all of this together?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Aspen Institute put it together, Sports and Society Program, also in combination with our Health, Medicine, and Society Program. And it's a, as you described, sort of a return-to-play risk assessment tool that anybody can use at any age, but it's more geared particularly for youth. And it sort of assesses about 25 different sports and physical activities based on what is the highest risk, you know, for transmission, what would be a medium risk, and what would be the lowest risk. And the idea is just to inform people and to have them be able to understand, you know, what a return to play, you know, could look like based on what health experts are saying.
And the key elements of this are that there should be no organized sports or activities, certainly no competitions.
Yeah, so it depends on what sport and what area you are, right? So there are certain sports, particularly more that are individual sports, let's say golf or, you know, tennis, you know, running maybe, that if you think about it, are sort of socially distant sports. You know, there's not a whole lot of contact involved with other people. And when you do compete with other people, it's often spread out from a distance. So that is an easier sport to bring back than, say, football, you know, or wrestling or basketball, which all those are have contact. Basketball also is an indoor sport, and there's more transmission, we know, of the virus indoors than outdoors. So a lot of it depends on the type of sport, whether you're going to be following the right guidelines, and what your local public health authorities are saying about what you can do based on conditions on the ground.
And you've also put together a very comprehensive list of not only how to do individual workouts for team sports, but also some individualized sports and some great ideas for particularly outdoor activities that would be great for kids and great for the family.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are lots of things that people can still do, even if you're in an area right now where it's shut down or there's very limited, you know, movement. You can go for walks. You can go for hikes. Bicycles have really taken off during this pandemic over the past several months. Bike sales are through the roof. My kids are even riding bikes, and they never had before. And in my neighborhood, I see so many kids riding bikes. It's such a relaxing and almost sort of like a sense of freedom a little bit, I think, for kids and even adults. I've been riding some as well, just having the wind in your face. So the bottom line is that there are other opportunities to do things beyond organized sports if you're not able to do that.
We're talking with John Solomon from the Aspen Institute. Now, I see in social media a lot of comments from parents as we here in Maine have returned up some team sports. Kids are playing soccer and baseball. Soccer, I don't believe they're doing actual competition, but doing drills, utilizing social distancing. But we're seeing some summer baseball going on, and I see parents often talk about how much their kids need this for their mental health, and they're willing to take the physical risk for the mental health and well-being of their children. It seems to me there might be better and safer ways to go to address those needs.
Yeah, I mean, it's a delicate balance. I mean, look, there is no doubt that kids are missing out on the social and emotional and mental benefits of playing sports and the physical activity of playing sports, right? It's harder to get kids to be moving their bodies outside oftentimes without organized sports. And you know, the CDC recommends kids get 60 minutes of physical activity per day. There's a recent study out of the University of Wisconsin that surveyed about 3,000 adolescent athletes in the state that showed physical activity in the month of May was down 50% compared to historical numbers among these adolescents. And they also shown increasing tendencies of having anxiety and also depression among these adolescent athletes. So that is real, and that needs to be part of the conversation. That said, we want kids to return to sports in a safe way, given so much that is unknown about the virus. So a lot of public health experts and a lot of national sport organizations, and something that we subscribe to as well, is bringing youth sports back in a phased return. So what does that mean? Again, some of it depends on, a lot of it depends on what your conditions are on the ground. What works for Maine right now may not be working in Houston, Texas, where they're having a huge outbreak.
Right.
But you want to bring things back slowly. So first you could do, individual training, outside. Then maybe you're getting back to some practices in smaller groups with a number of kids, spread out with social distancing, wearing masks when needed, although not during physical activity, but at other times. Then maybe, as conditions, if they're still acceptable, you move to more regular practice. And then when you finally do get to competition, it's really important that the games are local. You're playing local teams. But what's happening in a lot of the country is there's a lot of these major travel sports events that have returned because youth sports is highly commercialized. And a lot of people make a lot of money off it. And what happens is that's bringing different people from different parts of the country all together and increasing the risk of super spreader events and transmitting the virus from one community to another. And what a lot of public health experts say is that travel sports going to different regions, different states, should be the last phase of youth sports that should return.
And John, that brings up a larger question, and beyond the parameters of the pandemic, are we serving our young people with travel sports, with so much of it going on that even, my gosh, kids as young as 7, 8 years old find themselves being year-round athletes quite often? Is that in their best interests?
No, it's really not. There's been a lot of research for a number of years that shows that specializing in one sport at an early age can lead to overuse injuries and it can lead to burnout. Overuse injuries in the sense that you're using your same body parts. If you're only a pitcher, everyone playing baseball, 10 to 12 months all year, you're using the same motions and you're not using other parts of your body or also just getting rest on that part of the body. And then burnout as well. I mean, we're weeding out a lot of kids at very young ages based on skill levels at 8, 9, 10 years old before they've grown into their bodies, before they've grown into their skill sets and grown even to their interests. So, we did some research of a national survey of youth sports parents last year, and it showed that parents said the average age their child quits a sport is at age 11. They usually don't last a particular sport longer than, 2 or 3 years, but they're quitting sports. They're often leaving it, and one of the biggest reasons why is it's not fun. So we really need to be focusing at the younger levels of, hey, let's keep this fun. Let's learn basic skills. Let's try different sports because, all right, soccer, you get bored of it or you get hurt in soccer. Maybe you move on to baseball then because you've been trying it and there's still another way to keep you going. You don't want to create the best athletes at 8, 9, 10 years old. We want them to be the best athletes at 16, 17, 18 years old and then athletes for life because we know all of the physical, emotional, and social benefits that come with being physically active.
Well, and as an old coach, I look at the way a lot of these, not everyone, but a lot of these travel programs are structured, and it's sort of the reverse of what we as coaches know to be the best way to go, which is having that proper balance and ratio of practices to games. But with these travel teams, the practice, you don't make money from the practices, that comes from the games. And so maybe there's a practice once a week and then off to a tournament to play 6, 7 games in a weekend.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's gradually been happening, over the past couple of decades, really in the last 10 years or so, and that is youth sports has become much more privatized. So it used to be, so I'm 43, growing up, you played typically sports with your local community league, and you played with people who all were in your local community. And there was enough resources there, to create a good product, a quality product. You had coaches. But what happened with the privatization of it is it's moved out a lot of those families who have resources and who have time, to volunteer and be coaches. And they've moved on to the travel sports, and they're playing other kids in other states, other parts of your state. And it's left behind a lot of these local leagues that, A, don't have the kids and then thus the money, the registration fees, as much anymore. Also don't have the the volunteers anymore to be, you know, quality coaches. And so the community leagues really need to be, we believe, be revitalized because they're not able to provide as good an alternative to a lot of parents out there who actually, I think, do want to get off this travel sports cycle. And there are benefits to travel sports. Let me say that. There are a lot of relationships that are built, and there are kids and families who enjoy it. But there are many who feel like that they're only doing it because they feel like they have to in order to sort of keep up with the Joneses, and that's the only way their child can make the high school team, much less the very long odds of playing college or pro sports. They don't feel like there's a better alternative, and they have to keep doing this. So we need to give them better alternatives, cheaper alternatives that are more local and community-based.
Yeah, and that would seem to be the only way to get the genie back in the bottle is to provide those local community-based alternatives, and that has the fringe benefit as well, since they're often supported by taxpayers, of allowing people of low income to participate in sports and not get left behind.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that is going to happen here after COVID-19, and this happened after the last recession in 2008, is we're going to see, you know, parks and recreation department budgets significantly slashed. You know, municipalities, cities, counties are losing their tax revenue right now with businesses being shut down. So they're going to be making cuts. And historically, parks and rec departments are cut. There's been some, you know, national surveys by the National Parks and Recreation Association showing that about a third of their parks and rec departments are already making cuts this year and already planning for cuts in 2021. And the average cut they're looking at is about, you know, the 10 to 20%. And that's already after they've had, you know, cuts here over the past decade. So we're going to have to be more innovative and think outside the box and be more creative. And one of the ways, I think, is also emphasizing how sports can promote social and emotional skills, meaning personal development and growth in athletes. Like, if you can do that well and be able to measure it, you know, whether it's through, you know, feedback from parents, the kids, you know, surveys, you know, having hard data, you know, to show potential funders and to show, you know, municipalities and show families. I think there is a craving for that and an audience for that, but you just have to be able to show it and be able to apply it.
Well, we appreciate the wonderful work you're doing at the Aspen Institute. You can get more information by visiting the website at aspeninstitute.org. John Solomon, been really fun talking with you. Thank you for making time for us this afternoon. Stay safe and be well.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.